Stan, you have 5 points that Congress should consider in your testimony. I'm going to review them and ask you to tell me a little bit about them. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Sure, always a pleasure.
The first one, you write, while cost is a critical factor in most sourcing decisions, in others, it's not relevant. How can cost not be relevant to a decision about contracting?
Sure. So cost is not relevant by law in some cases. So, for instance, if I have work that's inherently governmental, or I have work that is deemed so critical that it has to be done by a federal employee, as OMB has made very clear, cost really isn't the issue. We've decided that the source is mandated, if you will, that it has to be performed by a federal employee. So it doesn't matter if the federal employee is more or less expensive than a contractor, it's to be performed by a federal employee. So it's not relevant there. In other cases, cost isn't relevant because the actual compensation value, market value of the talent involved is often much higher than anything the government could afford to pay. So this came out, if you looked at this CBO report a month or so ago, where they looked at it, sort of tried to do a general algorithm around comparing federal pay to the commercial world. And what they essentially found was the higher up you go the professional ladder of skills and capability, the more pronounced that pay gap becomes. And there are many areas in government where we need very significant technology skills, for example. The government is often not competitive for those skills, and to get them, you have to utilize a contractor who is able to hire them and bring them in at other than the government pay scale. Now, you could argue that it's relevant because they are more expensive, but it's not really relevant because you need the skills, and the only way to get them is to go through a contractor, not because the government pay scale doesn't allow for that. It's an issue the intelligence community very clearly identified a couple years ago. So it's relevant in many cases, but in some cases it really is not the determining factor.
All right. The second of your 5 points that you presented to the Subcommittee on Contracting Oversight, the key to getting the right answer for the American taxpayer in cases where cost is a factor lies in ensuring that the government's using the best and most complete taxonomy for conducting its cost comparisons. What does that mean?
You don't understand the fancy language? Basically, the cost comparison methodologies that are out there today don't get you to the kind of comparison you need to have, the sort of rigorous analytics that will get you an answer that's actually accurate. So there was a terrific study done last year by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. It's really the seminal study analysis, if you will, of the old, what we used to call the A76 competitive sourcing methodology and the cost comparison method in there, and then what the Department of Defense is now required to use, which is called a directive-type memorandum, a DTM. And they went through both of those and identified the gaps that exist and then proposed a new taxonomy, a new methodology and elements that you would want to include to make sure you're getting as close to an apples-to-apples comparison as possible. Today, we don't really have that within the formal procedures. And then what we're seeing in the civilian agencies, frankly, and to some extent at DOD, are very informal cost comparisons, which don't even come close to capturing cost.
The third point is government in-house cost estimates fail to account for the full cost impacts incurred by other than the requiring agency or true life cycle costs associated with the hiring of federal personnel. Now, this is one I do understand. We've talked about this, you and I, and on a number of occasions. I've covered this with other people, and it involves the full package of pay and benefits that federal government employees receive. Primarily, is that the only aspect of this?
No, it's actually not. I mean, it's the full package, or what we would call a fully burdened compensation. But that point actually specifically spoke to a number of cases we've seen, actually in part by old policy, although some of it's been changed, and that is that nobody takes into account things like post-retirement costs, some of which are front-loaded and some of which are not. So we had cases about a year ago. There was a case in the Air Force where they had not even calculated anything associated with what OPM would have to take on as post-retirement expenses for the 350 people the Air Force wanted to insource. And if you just look at something like health insurance premiums, they hadn't even thought about that. There is a factor in some of the methodologies to try to account for some of it, but it's far from complete. So that's really where we were going with that point. But your other point is also correct. We've seen a number of cases, and in fact, it's part of the CSIS analysis showed that under the DTM, which the Defense Department has to use now, there is a factor for contract administration, which makes sense. If you have contractors, you have to have resources internally to manage them, and there's a cost associated with that. There's no factor for internal supervision, which you have to have as well. It may not be the same, but there's a cost. There's a variety of those kinds of things, and there's a number of them that are laid out in the CSIS report that we're also looking at that are identifiable. I mean, they're not some amorphous figure somewhere.
I'm going to ask my colleague Jack Moore to go and dig up that CSIS report from their website, and we'll link that up later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth along with your testimony, Stan. The fourth one on this list of recommendations to Congress is one that I have to admit goofed me up a little bit, because it kind of I wondered why it wasn't the first one. Attempts to answer in general the perennial question, who is more expensive, are off track. I mean, you kind of are saying you're asking the wrong thing here. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's the wrong question. You know, some of the impetus behind this hearing actually grew out of a report from the Project on Government Oversight from POGO that purported to show that on average contractors are 1.8 times more expensive than government employees. Well, if you look at the report, there were two problems with it. One is the way they came up with the number, which is they didn't consider a lot of cost factors. They used GSA published schedule rates, which are typically discounted significantly through competition and so forth. But again, it gets back to the point I was making earlier. Averages don't tell me anything. It's not the basis on which to make policy. If I am looking at, and let me use an actual example if you have a second.
Mm-hmm.
We don't run out of time here. A few years ago, the intelligence community, the chief human capital officer, issued a report. And the takeaway from the report that was most widely seen was that contractors were on average 50% more expensive than government employees. But when you read through it, and he would explain this when asked, what they found in the intelligence community was that, and this is rough numbers, it's not exact, roughly half of their contractor employees were doing relatively routine stuff, and there was some comparability, and it could be somewhat less, somewhat more, dependent on what they were doing. But the other half, or close to half, were very specialized high-end skills that fall into that category I mentioned earlier, that the market value of those skills, you know, really significant analytics skills, really significant cyber skills, or whatever it might be, were substantially higher than anything on the government pay scale. So when I include that number of people in the averaging, it brings the average up. But it's not relevant because if I'm not willing to pay that, I can't get those skills. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do.
So the averaging itself doesn't really tell you anything. What really matters is, in each circumstance, do you have a methodology, or pardon the expression, a taxonomy, that actually gets you, enables you to assess it for that specific circumstance with the same skill levels, the same general capabilities and so forth, which would be more expensive or less expensive on a case-by-case basis. Averages don't really tell us anything.
I'm just about out of time. I'm going to just mention the fifth one and encourage folks to go and read your testimony at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And that one is the process for making sourcing decisions should be subjected to transparency and accountability. And your testimony there indicates what you think about that, Stan. I appreciate having you on with me this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, Francis.